Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
We're going to return to the United States election. We're going to hear from both Republicans and Democrats. But first, Una Kelly, our reporter in the United States, joins us with the very latest results. They're still emerging this morning, even though the main networks now have called the election for Donald Trump. So Una, what can you tell us?
Yeah, well, Claire, CNN's officially called it, all the networks have. That's over, and now the commentary is turning towards what kind of presidency is this going to be. Donald Trump has said a lot of things. People are wondering now, what does mass deportations mean? What will things mean for people's daily lives? What will the cabinet look like? What kind of people is Donald Trump going to bring in? Will Robert F. Kennedy have that big role in health that was talked about? People are saying there may be a national abortion ban, and people are going to have to deal with that. Also, now people are starting to parse through the data and look at how Trump managed to gain voters among black voters, to get out the Hispanic vote. How did this coalition come together, and is it going to grow stronger? People are also commenting on the fact that the Republican Party is starting to look and sound more like working class voters now. And something I was just thinking is that when we were at a Trump rally on Monday night, the speakers there were talking about the Harris campaign, saying, well, they have Bon Jovi and Beyonce, but we have farmers, we have auto workers. So there's a sense that they're projecting that they're in touch with the people. And people now here are saying, look, this is America, this is what was chosen, and now people are just going to have to deal with it.
Interesting, when Trump was at made his what was essentially a victory speech in the early hours this morning, surrounded by his family and his supporters, Una, that he very specifically and clearly said that both RFK and Elon Musk were going to form a very important part of this administration. Is that being talked about this morning?
It is a bit. People were just saying, is there going to be any sort of moderating force now in the people that he's surrounded by? When you think about the people he went in with the last time, there were some other politicians and generals, and they're saying possibly he won't be restrained by any moderating force now, that he may be able to do whatever he wants. There was some talk that maybe the likes of Nikki Haley might have some kind of role, and would she be a moderating force? But I think people have the sense that, you know, Trump might just be able to do whatever he wants.
Una Kelly, thank you very much. Una is in Michigan for us this morning. Let's get more reaction. I'm joined now by Lindy Lee, Democratic National Finance Committee member, and Susie Moore, who's Deputy Managing Editor at redstate.com. And good morning to you both. Susie, I'll start with you. Donald Trump says this is a magnificent victory. What do you think the key to his resounding success was?
I think the key, I guess, was resilience and a determination on his part. I mean, he definitely put it all out there in terms of his campaigning this time around. And I also think it was helpful to his campaign to bring in people. I was listening to your discussion just a moment ago, and bring in people like RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, people that have kind of joined his sort of team of rivals that are not traditional Republicans. So I think that helped broaden the base of people supporting him.
I'm sure you've heard this morning that people feel nervous now. People feel scared. You know, when you hear him talking about, during the campaign, mass deportations, do you understand that fear?
I do understand. It's a difficult thing because we're very divided here in the States, and particularly with regard to Donald Trump. People either seem to love him or hate him, and the people that don't care for him often are they're given a perception of him that may not always be as dire and as dark as it seems, and it's unfortunate. That's not to say he's not without flaws, or that he is without flaws. But I do think there's a perception issue there. As far as the mass deportation thing goes, yeah, I mean, that's a tough issue. We've had mass inflow of immigration over the past few years, and in ways that are very, very difficult to sustain. And I do think that one of the strongest policy arguments for Donald Trump is his tough stance on immigration, on actually enforcing a border. So people respect that. And the majority of Americans seem to support that approach.
Well, let's see what Lindy Lee has to say. And Lindy, we've spoken to you so many times over the course of the campaign, and I think it's fair to say we've been charmed by your optimism. Where did it all go wrong?
I think, Claire, first of all, it's always such a pleasure to be with you. I think it really came down to four primary factors, and that would be the brunt of the inflation over the last couple of years. People are reminded of price hikes every single time they buy milk or bread or, you know, eggs at the supermarket. Inflation has come down to 2.1%, but cumulative price hikes are still there. So that's number one. And number two, like Susie said, and I am a Democrat, I'm saying this, I'm a naturalized American who waited in line to come the right way. My family and I came when I was 4 years old. We came the right way. We brought skills. And during the last 30 years, we created hundreds of American jobs. And I think that's sort of immigration that we want to encourage. So even as a Democrat, I can tell you, I'm all in favor of legal immigration, but we need to make sure that we have a secure border. Mm-hmm. And I think the Biden administration should have issued those executive orders sooner. He didn't do that until this year. Having said that, though, I do want to remind our viewers that Trump was the one who torpedoed the bipartisan border deal because he wanted migrants as an issue. He wanted to fearmonger about migrants during the campaign. Obviously, he did that to tremendous effect. So that was number two. And number three, I think perhaps Tim Walz was an ideal candidate. Unfortunately, he had one gaffe after another and even called himself a knucklehead on the debate stage, which is not something I think any presidential candidate would want in ideal world. So I think Governor Shapiro, my own governor, would have been a much more formidable candidate. He certainly would have done better in the blue wall state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, well, I know over the course of our conversations that you were buoyed by all of the donations that came in for Kamala Harris when it was decided that she would run for the Democrats in your role.
I raised about $3 million for her.
Yeah, and you're on the finance committee, so you know about this topic very well. But it looks now at these figures, at this resounding victory for Donald Trump and the Republicans, that she was the wrong candidate, Lindy.
Well, that actually, Claire, you segue right into the fourth point that I wanted to talk about. We didn't have a primary. Let's not forget about that. Mm-hmm. We had a very truncated process. And at the end of the day, I love President Biden. I love the Irish, I just got to say. But he shouldn't have run for re-election. He left Kamala Harris 107 days to introduce...
Oh, Lindy's line seems to have...
Her biography in October.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, your line just dropped there for a moment. So you believe that Kamala Harris just didn't have enough time?
Not only that, we should have had a primary in order to determine who would have been the strongest candidate. If we truly believe that Trump is an existential threat to everything we hold dear as Americans, then we should have had a really rigorous process to figure out who that person was. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that process.
Yeah,
and so I think, honestly, the biggest winner tonight was Governor Josh Shapiro. And I'm talking about in terms of 2028, if we still have a democracy at that point.
Right. Okay. So looking ahead, you think that he will be the man for the Democrats?
Yeah, because he wasn't scarred, right? He wasn't scarred in this particular race. So, he's withheld his gunpowder, so to speak.
Right. Well, Susie, to come back to you, we know Joe Biden, who we've just mentioned there, faced so much criticism and will continue to now because the finger of blame probably will be pointed at him for staying in the race too long. But a lot of that centred around his age and his fitness for office. Donald Trump is 78. Like, he's facing into a difficult 4-year term now. Do you think he's going to face similar scrutiny?
He may very well, definitely chronologically, he's close in age to Joe Biden. I think there's a difference, and you can see it quite clearly when you see the way they comport themselves. Where as of right now, Donald Trump still appears to be a very vigorous, very hale figure. And rather than being beaten down by the campaign process, he seems to strangely be invigorated by it. I also think that he's coming into this presidency older and wiser, and that may help him sort of deal with the headwinds that he's going to face. But he also has a bright young vice president that he's brought along with him. So I think that's a little bit reassuring to those who are concerned about his age.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Susie, the result means for women's health care and the reproductive freedom in the United States?
Well, interestingly enough, I think it doesn't mean as much as perhaps the Democrats were trying to portray it as one of their stronger points in the race. And the reason being this, because of the Dobbs decision that came down in 2022, the decision as far as abortion was sent back to the states. And my home state, Missouri, which was the very, very first state to implement a law once that decision came in that was very restrictive on abortion, just last night, passed a constitutional amendment that now opens or makes abortion legal in Missouri again. So the states are one by one sorting it out, and it's going to be a long fight. And I don't know that we'll ever get to a point where it's fully settled, but the bottom line is those decisions are back at the state level, and you're seeing even very red states like my own, vote in ways that actually allow for abortion. And I think you're going to see a lot of back and forth on that. But, the fear mongering about the Handmaid's Tale aspect of it, I think that's far overblown. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to see any of that here.
Lindy, do you agree?
I unfortunately, with all due respect, disagree. And what Kamala Harris said on the debate stage was accurate. There was a woman bleeding out in the parking lot because of a Trump abortion ban. And this is not engaging in hyperbole. These are actual stories. We have one story after another of women dying because of their inability to get abortion care, reproductive care. And I honestly, I'm not one of those extremists on this matter either. I'm just saying that Harris actually struck a fairly moderate tone on this issue. She said she merely wanted to restore the rights given to us under Roe v. Wade. She wasn't seeking to expand it. So unfortunately, it just carry us over the finish line. I think we were kind of hoping that because the polls were so wrong in 2022 and they underestimated Democrat support, perhaps it would be wrong in 2024 as well. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. And Trump was again underestimated in the polls, just like he was in 2016 and 2020. Mm-hmm. But I do want to mention that the margin of error for a lot of these polls were just 3%. So these polls weren't necessarily wrong. They were just, he still won. It was a literal coin flip. It was a jump ball. So on the whole, the polls were actually fairly accurate, and so it amazes me that this is the worst case scenario. And she couldn't bring out, we unfortunately couldn't achieve those gains in New York and California, those traditionally liberal states.
Yeah.
And she lost the popular vote.
Isn't it interesting, though, that the margin of error seems to always, when we're talking about Donald Trump, go against Donald Trump. And then in reality, we see that the margin of error actually falls into his lap.
Yeah, I think the reason is because of the Trump, shy Trump voter phenomenon. People are just really loath to engage with pollsters, number one, and number two, sometimes to admit that they support Trump. It's a deeply personal issue for a lot of his supporters, and they just don't want to engage, and they don't want to admit it. So I think it's just really hard to reach those voters. And hey, I've actually had a feeling that this would happen. I didn't want to vocalize it because it's just very hard. I just had a feeling because I've been around in Pennsylvania. I understand it. I've been there almost all my life. And the energy, and Senator John Fetterman actually said the same thing. The energy for Trump was like very intense here in the state of Pennsylvania.
Right.
So Biden was only able to win that because he has a strong following in the northeast portion of the state, and that's Scranton. It's very white and Catholic, and they love him there. They absolutely do. But Kamala Harris was from California. It didn't have that.
It didn't translate.
Tie.
All right.
Exactly.
Well, listen, we're going to leave it there for now. I want to thank you both, Susie Moore from redstate.com and Lindy Lee from the Democratic National Finance Committee. We will return to the US presidential election on the program, but coming up next, former Housing Minister Owen Murphy on his new book.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.